From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Step by step, the United States and Russia have walked back to a pretty ugly place in relations lately. Over Ukraine, Crimea, Syria, fraying arms deals, hacking, and charges of direct intervention in the American political process. The rhetoric has gotten very hot, but the reality is pretty hot, too. Russian chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov says, stop Putin now or pay later. Russia scholar Stephen Cohen says, don't go down this road. This hour on Point, Garry Kasparov and more on the 2016 election and the future of U.S.-Russia relations. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you see a new Cold War unfolding? Do you fear a hot war, a cyber war? What's the right response to Russia? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. A special welcome today to our new listeners in Louisville, Kentucky on 89.3 WFPL. Joining me now from New York is Garry Kasparov, former Russian chess champion and Russian pro-democracy leader. He spent a record 20 years as the world's top-ranked chess player until retiring professional chess in 2005. He's author of the book Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped, which will be out in paperback on November 8th. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Garry Kasparov, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for inviting me.
Why are these relations spiraling to such a dark and fraught place?
Look, I think it would be wrong to blame the United States because Obama's administration did everything, in my view, too much, trying to accommodate Putin, ignoring the fact that Putin made anti-American propaganda and anti-American activities a staple of his domestic propaganda quite a long time ago, and it has been intensifying ever since. What's happened with Russian and American relations, it's not a proof that any concessions to dictator taken by him as a sign of weakness. And he always wants to move forward. He never asks why. Only asks why not. And I've been warning about the danger of Putin's regime, not only for Russia, not only for neighboring countries, but for the rest of the world for many years. And in my book, Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped, I argued that the new rise of confrontation would be inevitable because Putin, who has been facing collapse of Russian economy, would have no other choice but to rely on foreign aggression and anti-American, anti-free world activities as the only legitimate argument for him staying in power forever.
Inevitable confrontation. At one time, this was considered unthinkable because of the nuclear arms of both sides. Now I'm reading, just in the last week or so, they're doing large-scale nuclear attack drills in Russia. 40 million people engaged in, you know, if there were a nuclear or chemical attack, here's what you would need to do. We've heard Russia even talking about or intimating that a nuclear strike could be possible. Can these two really afford to be thinking of each other in terms of inevitable confrontation?
Again, we should look at this at the global situation from the Putin side. He's in power for 17 years, and everybody understands he's a dictator, his rule is illegitimate, and he has to come up with new arguments why he is indispensable for Russia. And confrontation is the only recipe every dictator has ever invented. He cannot rely on economy because economic situation has been deteriorating in Russia. The living standards has been slipping. And lately they announced that despite these facts, they will keep cutting. The Russian government will keep cutting spendings on social security, on Medicare, on housing, on everything except military and security.
How far do you think Russia has or is pushing this? Washington has said that they believe that there's been highest level, Moscow-directed hacking right into the heart of the American political process. Do you believe that? Do you buy that depiction of what happened there with WikiLeaks and more?
I have no doubt that the attack of that magnitude, we're talking about hacking of DNC server and other American top-level institutions, could happen without direct authorization from the supreme leader. It's a Putin's plan to discredit the U.S. democracy and democracy as a whole. And what we're seeing here now in the United States is not new for Europe. Putin has been using his lobbyists and agents across the continent, European continent, buying favors and mobilizing the most reactionary ultra-nationalist forces to torpedo European Union and to weaken the resolve of Europeans to defend their unity. But, of course, the biggest price for a KGB colonel would be to discredit U.S. elections. And I'm afraid that we're very close to the moment where Russian clandestine operations could, you know, spread doubts among millions and millions of Americans and, of course, among hundreds of millions of people around the world that U.S. election is fair. And the fact is that Donald Trump keeps repeating elections is rigged. Tells me that, you know, we are about to see a massive intervention from Russian hackers in 2 weeks' time, unless they're being stopped by the decisive actions of the U.S. administration.
We'll talk about action. You mentioned Donald Trump. Let's look at Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. How do you see Donald Trump and his perspective on Russia? How do you see Hillary Clinton, who has talked pretty tough on Russia? She's got some saying, oh, wow, if she gets in the White House, we are really back in Cold War lockup. How do you look at these two American candidates?
Look, I've been a fierce critic of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. I believe the policy of reset was a failure. Actually, Hillary now...
The policy of reset, the button.
And I think she recognized that Putin cannot be a reliable partner in any negotiations because confrontation is what Putin wants. And I think the fact that she learned these hard lessons and she's, you know, with all, you know... all the consequences, you know, related to stories about Hillary, she understands world politics and she understands that it will require, you know, decisive actions from the United States to rethink the policy of retrenchment that Obama installed. To the contrary, Donald Trump, who is known for, you know, for not being very consistent in statements, he flip-flops on almost every issue except one. He always backs Vladimir Putin. He always finds an excuse to defend Putin. And he follows every line of Kremlin propaganda, repeating that election is rigged. And he will try to build very intimate relations with Putin, insisting that that's the way to solve global problems. In my view, it's simply going back to the 20th, if not 19th century, where only big powers had a voice. And that's Putin's dream. Putin hates institutions like European Union, NATO, all institutions that for decades guaranteed safety and security and prosperity for Europe and the rest of the world. And of course, someone like Trump for Putin is an ideal counterpart, is a perfect agent of chaos that would spread doubts and even fear among American allies.
Hillary Clinton accuses Donald Trump of being a puppet or says he would be a puppet of Vladimir Putin. What do you make of that characterization? He says, no, you're the puppet to her. But what do you make of that?
I don't know whether Trump, you know, has been doing many things consciously. But I think listening to what Trump has been saying and, you know, expecting him to do what he has been promising to do, no doubt that Trump's administration, if he's elected, will be ideal counterpart for Putin's agenda to ruin global stability. Also, I'm worried. I'm troubled. I'm deeply troubled by the fact that Donald Trump refused to release his tax returns because knowing about his bankruptcies and about, you know, very murky state of his financial affairs, I would not be surprised to find some kind of massive help from Russian oligarchs at one point. And the fact is that he's so consistent in supporting Putin, in denying the fact that Russia was behind these hacking attacks in the United States, and also, you know, being very evasive on his tax returns. I mean, tells me that maybe there's something sinister in it, not just, you know, Trump's character, flaws of his character and his total lack of knowledge of foreign policy.
You have called for a harder line with Russia for a long time now. And you've been out there as a political activist in Russia. It looks to me like you're in the kind of self-imposed exile in the States now, living in New York. You've been in the thick of it over there. Now, Joe Biden, in the last couple of weeks, we've seen a tougher response from Washington, from the Obama administration. Joe Biden kind of elliptically seeming to threaten some U.S. retaliation for the Russian hacking. People are speculating maybe he's even talking about an American cyber attack on Russia. Is that kind of aggressive posture toward Russia wise? Is it profitable?
Look, unfortunately, we reached a point where there's no, peaceful resolution of the conflict because Putin has gone too far. And the reason he could go that far is that at many, points, there were several crossroads where America could choose to be tougher and to prevent Putin from feeling the vacuum created by Obama's retreat. And we can keep counting them. And I think the most important one was, of course, the infamous red line in Syria, where Putin realized that Obama had no appetite to act, even when the action was
chemical warfare.
Yes, when Assad first time used chemical weapons, he was caught by using chemical weapons, and that was a red line drawn by President Obama. And the fact is that the U.S. president, after drawing this red line, walked away and invited Putin to solve the problem. It was a signal for Putin that he could do whatever. And then we had Crimea, then we had a war in eastern Ukraine, and then we had Putin's intervention in European political life. And now, logically, he's trying to influence even the U.S. elections.
Don't you fear, though, that if we just go straight for retaliation, we get into a cycle that could be extremely dangerous, even hot war? They're talking hot war in Russia.
Do I fear? Yes, I do fear. But, from history, I know that every day that you delay your response, the price goes up. 3-4 years ago, America could stop Putin's ambitions by, making few tough moves that would not be even look tough by today's standards. And today, we're still talking about cyber retaliation as the very dangerous move. But the problem is that Putin, as you just pointed out, Putin's propaganda made nuclear war discussion kind of a mainstream debate on Russian television.
It's kind of
Russian
incredible.
Television is 24/7 filled with anti-U.S. propaganda, and people are just being, turning into zombies by listening to this nonsense.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Russia, the U.S., Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton with Russian chess grandmaster, now political activist, Garry Kasparov. Came out with a book about a year ago called Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. It's out in paperback in November 8th, consider that date. And he is looking with ever more rapt fascination, I guess, and high alarm at what's going on with Russia. On the other side, you've got people saying, let's slow down here. We don't have to do it this way. We're risking a cold war. Russia's talking about hot war. Maybe others are too. You can join us this hour. Are you shocked at the depth of the apparent, alleged, Russian role in messing with the U.S. elections? Are you buying Washington's assertion that it's high-level Moscow hacking we've seen in the American presidential campaign? And if Vladimir Putin is trying to corrupt or degrade America's political process, what's the right response to that? Do we need to cool down, step back, take it easy, avoid another cold war, another hot war? Stephen Cohen joins us in a few minutes. He's professor emeritus of Russian studies at NYU, at Princeton. Different view of what's going on here. And Russia, right in the middle, in a way that, it's been a very, very long time since Russia got this much attention in American presidential politics. This was Hillary Clinton responding to a question about one of her speeches, released by WikiLeaks, in the last presidential debate last week. She pivoted by saying Trump should disavow Russia. Trump said it would not be a bad thing if the Russia and the U.S. got along. He went right at her first.
Putin, from everything I see, has no respect for this person.
Well, that's because he'd rather have a puppet as president of
the United States. No puppet.
And it's pretty clear.
You're the puppet.
It's pretty clear you won't admit
that the
Russians have engaged in cyber attacks against the United States of America, that you encouraged espionage against our people.
Russian chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov joins us today from New York. Garry Kasparov, what about Donald Trump throughout this campaign? He has said, let's work with Russia. Why get into this adversarial relationship? Let's work with them against ISIS. Let's work with them on a number of fronts. What about that way of proceeding here?
Look, it is plenty of wishful thinking, as everything Donald Trump suggests. Russia in Syria is not fighting ISIS. We know it. As we speak, Russian military jets turning Aleppo into rubbles, killing innocent civilians. Putin never wanted to fight ISIS. He's there to protect his crony, his client, butcherous dictator Bashar al-Assad. Expecting Russia to play along, you know, simply contradicts what we know about Vladimir Putin. I'm sick and tired hearing, you know, all this wishful thinking and maybe and some kind of theoretical discussions. We have a record. Vladimir Putin has a credit history, and his credit history tells you that his train is moving in one direction. And Hillary Clinton was absolutely right, you know, stating that, you know, it's Donald Trump somehow invited Russians to hack and to intervene with U.S. elections by demanding to release more of these WikiLeaks emails. And it's, I think, a couple of days ago, we had a very funny, if you may call it funny, situation when Russia Today, a Kremlin foreign propaganda arm, released some of these emails, in Podesta emails, 25 minutes earlier than they appeared on WikiLeaks.
Yeah, Russia came out with them before WikiLeaks came out with them. That's a pretty odd state of affairs. And still, you've got big voices saying there is so much at stake here. Let's not get trapped again in a kind of war language, cold or hot. I'm looking at The Economist. They've been writing about Russia recently. They say, what should the West do? They say time is on the side of the West. A declining power needs containing until it's eventually overrun by its own contradiction, even as the urge to lash out remains. I'm looking here at Michael Mitchell Orenstein in Foreign Affairs saying, you know, U.S. policymakers must remain calm so as not to fall into the trap of overreacting to Russian escalation during the election campaign. Russia's trying to create a sense of chaos in world affairs. Don't go for it. Don't follow that path, they're saying, Gary.
Look, you mentioned word containment. You know, I would say deterrence. Again, I'm not asking, you know, to send troops to Ukraine or to start shooting down Russian planes in the skies of Syria. But you should understand that every day of a delay basically, you know, creates an illusion that for Putin that he could go even further. And I'm, you know, quite shocked that, you know, people are so quiet here discussing the potential outcome of Russian intervention in the U.S. elections, because I could easily see the situation on November 9 with Donald Trump refusing to accept his defeat and hundreds of voting polling stations will report irregularities because thousands and thousands of people, especially in the battleground states, would not be able to cast their vote since their names could be erased from the database.
You mean because of hacking? You're asserting Russian hacking, even election day.
Exactly. So this is because Putin's goal is clear. He has been repeating it time and again that, you know, democracy is just, you know, it's kind of a charade, you know, and every complaint of the United States or European Union about Russian dictatorship and Russian puppet parliament is a cover up for the geopolitical agenda to subdue Russia. So Putin's utmost goal to demonstrate that U.S. election is a fake, is a charade, and Donald Trump is helping him, and ask any expert to hack voters registration database in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, in Virginia, in Nevada. It's not a complicated task for experts who know how just to go into the Pentagon systems.
Chess grandmaster and political activist now Garry Kasparov joins us. Stephen Cohen joins us in a moment. Callers for you, Garry Kasparov. Ryan in Lexington, Kentucky. Ryan, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Just to kind of wade through all the propaganda that I'm actually hearing, and it does go both ways, propaganda does. From Tunisia to Syria, we've seen American fingerprints all over the Arab Spring. We see American weapons entering the hands of so-called moderate rebels, which are basically just moderate head choppers. I mean, we drop a THAAD missile system in Western Europe on the borders of Russia, and Russia's not supposed to be angry. And as far as your caller goes, or the gentleman you got there talking to,
Garry Kasparov,
you,
yeah.
You got to understand that, and I'm sure he understands this as well. Yeah, Putin is in office, but he was put there by his people. And if the Russians have any kind of economical issues, well, part of it's because of the sanctions the U.S. imposed on them because of Ukraine, which was overthrown from a pro-Russian government to now a more NATO-leaning government. you know, Crimea takeover, which, you know, the Russians had a base in Crimea for years that nobody seems to even be talking about, or that the Crimean people are more likely to roll towards
Russia.
So,
Ryan, you say forgive everything. Forgive everything. There's a kind of equivalency here.
I'm not saying forgive everything here, but I think we need to take a look at the whole picture. I mean, how does us supplying technical manpad systems and weapon systems in Syria to fight Syrian, you know, Bashar Assad's troops, how does that help any of the situation?
Ryan, let me put it to Garry Kasparov. Mr. Kasparov.
There's so many false assertions in the speech.
Well, there was a missile system that was put on much closer to Russia.
Missile defense system. By 2013, there was not a single American tank in Europe. Let me repeat, not a single American tank in Europe. And thanks God, and I can speak on behalf of people of Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, Poland, people who suffered decades under Soviet occupation, that they are members of NATO. Otherwise, Russian tanks would be rolling on the streets of Vilnius, Tallinn, and Riga. Now, I never seen, maybe that your caller, you know, can refresh my memory, American planes intentionally bombing hospital, intentionally, on the regular basis, and, you know, paying attention to the suffering of people all over the world. We see now that trying to take over Mosul, U.S.-led coalition is so cautious because there's about a million people living inside, and you could see what Putin is doing in Aleppo. And by the way, he did it already in Grozny. The Putin's 17 years is a steady line of crimes. And, you know, just trying to find a moral equivalence, I think it's a shame. And, you know, just people like your colleague, they don't understand that, you know, we already learned some tough lessons from history. And if you want to pretend that U.S. administration is equally guilty for creating these conflicts as a Russian dictatorship, and you are trying to assess that Russian people, you know, elected Putin. Yes, Hitler was also elected. So what? So we are dealing with a dictatorship, with a man who's staying in power. Election is a charade in Russia. He doesn't care about it. And his goal now is to make sure that American people will fight each other after elections that will not end peacefully, according to Putin's plan.
Troy in Iowa City, Iowa. Troy, you're on the air.
Yes, I was wondering if you could talk about the KGB subversion and how it's used. And also, do you think the next president should continuing bomb the Syrian government in maybe getting in a shooting war with the Soviet Union? But I would like you to talk about subversion first.
Which subversion, Troy, are you pointing to? What subversion?
Well, I think he knows what subversion is and how.
Of course, but what everybody knows what subversion is. But what are you in what arena? The KGB doing what? Where?
Well, I think it's very easy to manipulate people, and that's what subversion is.
Okay.
I would like him.
Do you mean in the U.S. election, or I just wish you'd be more specific? History's long. Lots of subversion out there.
Supporting actually Mrs. Clinton by saying, "Okay, well, if we do this, they'll blame Trump." Political subversion is happening very, very strongly.
So you're asserting or sides. You're asking if what has been interpreted as Russian support for Trump might in fact be a double backflip support for Hillary Clinton. Now we're okay, Garry Kasparov. What do you say?
I just, you know, it's this kind of conspiracy is too much even for a Russian. Yeah. And I picked up another, you know, Syrian government. You know, Bashar al-Assad is a criminal who gassed his own people. He killed hundreds of thousands of them and displaced millions. And, you know, we can pretend that we don't care, Syria is far away, but because he, with support of Putin and Iranian mullahs, you know, pushed millions of people out of his own country, they now are fleeing to Europe, creating political crisis in Europe, which helps ultra-nationalist groups that are, by the way, openly, let me repeat, openly funded by Vladimir Putin. So you can try to come up with any conspiracy theory, but at the end of the day, you can just start adding all these elements. Russian propaganda, domestic propaganda, has been supporting Trump. And, you know, when you look at the polls run in different countries, Russia is the only country where a majority, big majority, actually prefers Trump over Hillary Clinton. They don't vote, of course. Putin is not hiding his sympathy for not maybe Trump himself, but for the policies advocated by Trump. And Trump is very, you know, consistent with his lines that are simply too resembling the Kremlin's propaganda concept that NATO and EU and other international institutions that have been around for a long time, they are some kind of outdated, and instead we need a direct dialogue between superpowers.
Garry Kasparov, please stand by. Stephen Cohen joins us as well right now from New York, professor emeritus of Russian studies at NYU and Princeton. He's been thinking and writing a lot about what he's calling the new Cold War between Washington and the United States. Says Americans and the American media are not paying enough attention to how high it has already become ratcheted up. Stephen Cohen, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom.
So you hear Garry Kasparov's alarm? He's been sounding this alarm for some time now. He's been in Russia, was there himself, pushing for more democratic progress there, failed, got out, but he's looking out at the world and saying, we've got big trouble, and the U.S. ought to be resisting Russia more vigorously right now, already, like yesterday. What do you say?
You're going to have to help me, Tom. I disagree with almost everything Garry said, so I'm not sure exactly where to begin. I'm closer to your caller from Lexington, Kentucky, perhaps because I, too, grew up in Kentucky and hail from there. But maybe it would help if I gave you very quickly my sense of where we're at and how we got
here. Yes, please.
I've been arguing for 10 years that we're in a new Cold War with Russia. It's just words, Cold War, so let me put it differently. We're closer to actual war with Russia than we have been, I would say, since the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. The new Cold War is much more dangerous than the last Cold War for a couple of reasons. The old Cold War had its political epicenter in Berlin, far away from Russia.
Yep.
This Cold War has its political epicenter along Russia's western borders, from the Baltics to Ukraine. So one could easily imagine some kind of military accident or intentional act taking the Cold War into hot war. In that sense, it's much more dangerous. As we talk, there are three new Cold War fronts that are fraught with hot war. The Baltic area, Ukraine, and above all now, of course, Syria. So the question is, how did we get here? Garry feels that Putin is to blame. And if you were to Google Putin's aggression, your computer would explode. But I see this history, and I think as a historian, going back even before Putin came to power in 2000, as unwise American policy, whether it was intentional or unintentional, I'm not sure. But Garry never mentions NATO expansion. So to illustrate what that means, NATO marched from Berlin to Russia's borders during the last 15 to 16 years. Today, there is ongoing a major NATO military buildup in the Baltics and in Poland on Russia's borders. As Russia says, and I ask you to think about this, there's never been such amassing of Western military power on Russia's borders since the German invasion in June 1941. This is something very, very significant. The last point I would make, and these are general points, Garry sees Putin as a kind of, well, in his book, he says, Hitler-like figure, bent on aggression. And all the West has done is react. And in Garry's judgment, we haven't reacted strongly enough. He wants more. I think future historians will conclude, as I have, that essentially Putin has been a reactive leader. He's reacted to what he perceives to be, and it's not just Putin, it's the Russian political class, to Western aggression. Now, we could go back to the decision by President Bush, the second Bush, to abolish the anti-ballistic missile treaty in 2002. We could go to the steady march of NATO across Europe with clear intent of bringing in the former Soviet republics of Ukraine and Georgia. The notion that Russia, under any leader, maybe even under Garry Kasparov, would passively sit by and say, okay, we can nullify or question that assumption by asking ourselves, What would happen if Russian-Chinese military alliances appeared in Mexico or Canada?
Support for On Point and the following message come from Goldman Sachs. Get insights from some of the world's leading thinkers on markets, industries, and the global economy in the firm's podcast, Exchanges at Goldman Sachs. You'll hear discussions on topics with far-reaching implications like climate change, autonomous driving, the future of China's economic growth, plus much more. That's Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play, and at gs.com/podcast.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Russia, the U.S., Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton with Russian chess grandmaster, now political activist Garry Kasparov. He's out with a new book, Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. And with Stephen Cohen, professor emeritus of Russian studies at NYU and Princeton, author of Soviet Fates and Lost Alternatives, and much more. You can join the conversation this hour. What do you see here? From WikiLeaks to Syria to nukes to Ukraine, beyond, are we back in a fight with Russia? Do we need to cool down, step back, take it easy, avoid another Cold War, a hot war? Is Donald Trump right? We need to work with Russia. Is Hillary Clinton right? We need to confront Russia. What's the right move here? I want to get these two engaged with one another. But just this summer, in an onstage interview with CNN's Fareed Zakaria, here was Russian President Vladimir Putin responding to a question about his praise of Donald Trump.
I only said that he was a bright person. Isn't he bright? He is. I did not say anything else about him. But there's one thing that I paid attention to and that I definitely welcome, is that Mr. Trump said he's ready to restore full-fledged Russian-American relations. What can there be bad about it?
What can be bad about that? And it's been right in the middle of the debates. Here was the second debate, October 9th, Hillary Clinton talking about Russian involvement in the U.S. election cycle.
We have never in the history of our country been in a situation where an adversary, a foreign power, is working so hard to influence the outcome of the election. And believe me, they're not doing it to get me elected.
Hillary Clinton on October 9th. Garry Kasparov and Stephen Cohen are with us. Garry Kasparov, you're there listening in New York. Stephen Cohen says, look at unwise American policy that has set the table for a lot of the tension we see now, and that we are at risk of a hot war between these two powers.
As Professor Cohen mentioned, he is much closer to the listener in Louisville, Kentucky, while I'm much closer to people who have been suffering under Soviet occupation in Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Ukraine. And, of course, you know, he can mislead any listeners in Kentucky or elsewhere in the United States with his logic and professorial voice. But he understands what kind of reaction he will hear for these kind of false arguments in the capitals of the Eastern European countries. Let's look at the three new Cold War fronts, as he described. By the way, one of them is in
Baltics,
Syria.
Ukraine, Syria.
Ukraine and Syria. One of them is in Syria, which is far, far away from Russian borders. So that's why you simply should, you know, take it aside for a moment, because it doesn't add to the argument. Second is about, you know, NATO expansion to the east. Mm. By the way, Ukraine was not included. Georgia was not included. And those two countries that tried, countries, people in these countries, during free and fair elections, tried to push their countries to the west. And Putin attacked those two countries because he knew that successful Ukraine, independent Ukraine, would be anathema to Putin's dictatorship in Russia. And as for Baltics, I think it's a shame. It's a shame, you know. It's against the memories of tens of thousands, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in these countries killed by communists, countries that suffered under Soviet occupation, to talk about them, you know, being dragged into NATO. That was a wish of these countries. And by the way, now even Finland and Sweden, countries that wanted to remain neutral, are seriously considering joining NATO. It's a result of Putin's annexation of Crimea, his aggression in eastern Ukraine, and his military buildup at the borders of Baltic states. Estonia now is just, you know, seriously considering, you know, a kind of hybrid war against it. I mean, assuming that these countries could be a bulwark for aggression against Russia, it's not even a joke. I mean, it's such a bad interpretation of history, especially now at these days. 60 years ago, Soviet tanks in Budapest have been crushing Hungarian anti-communist revolution. And by the way, the West was quietly watching. There was not a single piece of evidence of NATO threat to Russia.
So Russia should simply accept when NATO NATO came closer to its border.
This is not about Russia. This is exactly the Cold War mentality. When Russia should accept, Russia should live in peace with its neighbors. And if Estonians want to be a member of NATO because they have such a bad history with Russia and they suffered for so many years under Russian occupation, so be it. You have to convince people that you're a friend by not violating every agreement as Russia did in Crimea and in Ukraine.
Let me invite Stephen Cohen in right there. What about it? The people, Garry Kasparov says, in Ukraine, Georgia, they wanted to lean to the West. The Baltics, he says, it's a shame to ignore the suffering that they had under Russian domination. These were choices.
Well, Garry's assertions are breathtaking. You probably remember the late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who famously said that each of us is entitled to our own opinions, but not to our own facts. Garry's allegations are just allegations. They're not actually facts. By the way, Syria is much closer to Russia than it is to the United States.
That's true, he's not wrong in saying that many in the Baltics were not happy with Russian domination. He's not wrong in saying that many in Ukraine wanted to move toward NATO.
That's correct, but when you say many, it doesn't mean all. For example, in 2014, when the crisis began there, Ukraine was a profoundly divided country. It was divided not by Putin or by the United States. It was divided by history. About half of Ukraine wanted to join, at least economically, the European Union. About half of the country, and this is what polls told us, wanted to adhere more closely to Russia. Here's the problem, part of the problem, with the way Garry formulates the issue. He wants to refight the old Cold War. The evidence that he produces for fighting it is historical. Legitimate grievances that the Baltic countries have against Soviet Russia. But if we refight the old Cold War, and he's thinking of World War II, then no Jew would ever advocate diplomatic relations with Germany. We move on. And we move on to the current situation because there are new realities. Putin's not Hitler. Putin's not Stalin.
Well, the Crimea is no longer independent of the Soviet Union. There have been movements of Russian weaponry, right on the doorstep of the Baltics. And if in current terms, look at politics inside Russia. I mean, we have our own troubles, but there, that's hardly...
I cannot tolerate. Right? Yeah, Germany went through the process of denazification. Russia is still run by KGB. That's why let's leave for another discussion. In fact, Putin and Stalin or Hitler, Russia is still run by the criminal organization that was responsible for mass killing of Estonians, Latvians, Lithuanians, Ukrainians, Poles, Hungarians, and Putin is a successor Dzerzhinsky and other leaders of the organization, and he's proudly stated himself as a successor.
Mr. Stephen Cohen, what about this perspective?
It's the same thing. I mean, Garry's drawing direct analogies with the past. That's not going to get us very far.
But that's not an analogy. He's saying it's the same people.
That's what Putin has been doing all the time.
No,
that's what Putin has been doing all the time.
Well, you got to let me get a word in.
Okay, yes, please.
I don't know quite how to respond to these vast generalizations.
Just go, sir.
Garry's assertion is, and I'm not an admirer of Putin or Trump, but there is a historical record. Putin has been, and he's accused of this, by the way, in the political class in Moscow, of being a reactive leader. They even try to use the expression that people have used against Obama here, that he leads from behind. He reacts too late. The West makes promises to him. There were a whole series about NATO. It breaks the promises, and Putin moves on. And it's only when a crisis or a real instigation or provocation by the West happens that Putin reacts. Now, we can argue, and I've argued, that in some cases, Crimea would be an example, he reacted unwisely or he overreacted. But the record is abundantly clear that the American march toward Russia's borders has been nonstop. For example, Gary is flatly wrong about Ukraine and Georgia. In 2008, President Bush went to the Budapest summit of NATO and announced that Ukraine and Georgia would be brought into NATO. Germany and France vetoed that. They saw it as reckless, something they didn't want to be involved in. But Ukraine, and to a lesser extent Georgia, has been on the Washington-Brussels NATO radar since the early 1990s. Russia had no power to react in the 1990s. It was on its knees. I think that any leader that would have followed Yeltsin would have begun the pushback. But here's the point, and the point that we really ought to be discussing. We are living, including in our relationship with Russia, in a much more dangerous situation than we've ever been in. I already made that point. I'll make another point that will really aggravate Gary. Our most essential national security potential partner in the world today is whoever sits in the Kremlin, and it is now Putin. We don't need a friend in the Kremlin. That was Clinton's big mistake when he kept referring to Yeltsin as his friend. We need a partner, a national security partner.
More important than China, more important than NATO.
Yes, for now. I mean, China's rising, but on those areas where we face existential threats, this is international terrorism, this is nuclear proliferation, this is climate change, this is the crisis of the European Union, which we haven't discussed. No partner in the world could be of more help to us than Putin.
This sounds like Donald Trump's perspective.
Trump, because I'm not a supporter of Trump, obviously. But think what Trump, and I don't know, I guess I'm the oldest person here in this discussion, but think what Trump said that so outraged the American mainstream media and Mrs. Clinton. He thinks we ought to cooperate with Russia. This was what we used to call detente. You remember that, Tom?
Yes.
Trump, though he doesn't say it because he can't connect dots, puts himself thereby in the tradition of Republican presidents, beginning with Eisenhower, who pursued detente, Nixon, who pursued detente, and of Ronald Reagan, who pursued detente with Gorbachev so fully that he and Gorbachev thought, mistakenly, they had actually ended the Cold War.
Stand by one moment. I just have to say right here, we're talking about Russia, the U.S., Trump, Clinton. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. But if I may, Stephen Cohen, take Ronald Reagan. Yeah, and more. But there was detente, but there was always within that this sense of a very strong embrace of political principles, American political principles, even as there was detente. And many people look at Trump and say, wait a minute, that looks like it could just be a sellout without political principle attached to it. And then where do we land?
Well, it's worse than that, Tom. I don't know your level of outrage or what your memory is, but it is simply outrageous that the Clinton campaign, abetted by a lot of mainstream media, has introduced this neo-McCarthyite baiting of Trump, which she repeated during the third debate, that he's a puppet of the Kremlin. Now, we went through this in this country. When I came from Kentucky and Indiana to New York to graduate school, I felt how intimidated my senior professors still were by what had happened to them under McCarthy.
But is it not weird to have what we're told is Russian intervention via WikiLeaks in the heart of the American presidential campaign? Do you know
Professor Theodore Postol at MIT?
Yes, of course.
All right, so you should get Ted on. Ted has said, and for your listeners who don't know, Ted is an eminent, perhaps preeminent, nuclear scientist, engineer, who consults for the Department of Defense. And he has said in recent days there is zero factual evidence that the Russians were behind the hacking of the Democratic National Committee. He said it's possible they were, but by the technology used, and this is not my view, this is Ted's view, and this is his specialization, technologically, nobody can say who did the hacking. So were we taking an allegation, introducing McCarthyism into the American political bloodstream, which is going to plague us for years, and drifting toward war with Russia? Most of Gary's assertions about what the KGB is doing today, about the Baltics, about Ukraine, about Syria, simply don't have a factual basis. Let me give you one last point.
Quickly, I want to give Mr. Kasparov another shot here.
About 6 weeks ago, President Obama made a deal with President Putin for a military alliance in Syria against the Islamic State and Nusra in Aleppo. It's a matter of record. It was announced. It died 48 hours before it was implemented because the Department of Defense attacked Syrian forces, which was a violation of that agreement. Now, if President Obama thought it was a time for a military alliance with Russia in Syria, a cooperation that might have led to cooperation elsewhere in the Baltics and in Ukraine, and somebody thought it so serious it needed to be stopped, that tells you how desperate the politics of this are now.
Stephen Cohen, stand by. Gary Kasparov, this canyon is so wide, I can see we will not close it today, but I'll give you the long last word here. It's yours.
Yeah, I just heard words, military cooperation in the Baltics. Why on earth America should cooperate with Russia in Baltics? They're independent countries. It's you who want to rethink the Cold War. It's you who want to go back to the time when two big powers, advised by some, you know, wise men, you know, will find solutions for smaller countries. I'm speaking on behalf of millions of people who have suffered under Soviet occupation, and they want to live free, in peace, and they are terrified by a threat from Moscow. And this is not a mythical threat. This is not, you know, my allegations. There are real Russian military buildups that are forcing even Finns and Swedes thinking about joining NATO.
What's the one thing you would do now to send a message to Russia, Mr. Kasparov?
I think that the cyber retaliation is vital, but it's very important that, you know, Obama will start preparing the ground for massive response by the next administration, based not on American grievances, but also on the cooperation with American traditional allies. I didn't hear about UK, about Europe, about Japan, about South Korea. Everybody is under threat now from the global conspiracy led by Putin and his cronies around the world.
We have a wide gulf here. We're not going to close it today. We'll come back to it. Stephen Cohen at NYU and Princeton, Professor Emeritus Gary Kasparov, author of Winter is Coming. You've given us almost too much to chew on. We will. Thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.